Welcome to the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for March 4th, 2003. Welcome to you all, and I would call your attention to, first before we get started, I always give this little speech, so those of you who have heard it, my apologies, you get to hear it again. If you have signed up on the witness registration sheet, be certain to take note of the little box here with the bold print in it. It talks about if you are a public official and a lobbyist, that you acknowledge that your testimony under the law has to be truthful and accurate. This does not apply to members of the public at large, but we also want you to still give us truthful and accurate testimony anyway. So, having said that, we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2209. And, Ray, do we have any amendments for this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you have -1 amendments. A couple of things. I hand engrossed the original measure with the -1 amendments and just passed those out to you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what the -1 amendments do is grant authority for the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to hunt game mammals or game birds from or with the aid of an aircraft. The amendment grants the State Department of Fish and Wildlife authority to transmit information from an aircraft to a person not in the aircraft for the purposes of protecting public safety and wildlife species. It grants authority for the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to define by rule the term protecting public safety or wildlife species. And it grants authority for the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to conduct scientific research under specified conditions. Finally, the amendment does declare an emergency, makes this measure effective on passage. Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Before we go any further, I just want to state we are not going to be hearing House Bill 2416 today. If you're here for that purpose, we have decided not to hear that bill. So we will move forward on this particular bill. And the chair would like to call, in order of the sign-up sheet, Jared Broadfoot. Jared, is there anyone testifying here with you on this issue? Okay, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapters of the Safari Club International. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2209 and in opposition to the -1 amendments. We feel that House Bill 2209 does give the department the authority to utilize aircraft and when conducting wildlife management activities or protecting human safety, which will, the bill is very clear, concise, to the point, and we would urge that you support this bill and move it out of the committee as soon as possible.
Okay. Any additional comments, members, questions of Jared? All right, hearing none, thank you, Jared. Appreciate it. Chair would like to call Ron Anglin, ODF&W. Welcome, Ron. For the record, state your name.
Thank you, Chair Krupp. Members of the committee, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator, ODFW. We've already presented our bill statement on this particular bill, and after the last hearing, you directed us to try and work with the parties to come up with an acceptable amendment, and quite frankly, we came to an impasse, and the department is not willing to support the amendment as presented and would like to stand with the original bill as submitted.
All right. Members, questions? Representative Worth.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Anglin, can you tell me with this, the way the bill stands now, are you seeking or does this permit you authority to shoot wolves from aircraft if they fall under a management plan?
Chair Krupp, Representative Worth, it would depend on the classification of the wolf, whether it was the classification as presented by either the legislature or protections that were put in place by our Fish and Wildlife Commission. And certainly if the wolf is classified as a predator by the legislature, this amendment or this bill would make no difference because there are specific bills dealing with predatory animals that allow the take and use of virtually any method. If it's classified in such a way that the commission would have authority to take action and direct how animals could be taken. The potential would be there, yes, that wolves could be taken by aircraft under whatever conditions the commission would define.
Thank you.
Members, questions additionally? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at all the words, both the words in the base bill and the words in the dash one, am I safe in understanding it basically comes down to a difference between the words in the dash one, public safety or wildlife species, and in the base bill, wildlife management activities? Is that the fundamental difference between those words?
Chair, cross-representative, that's correct. It's the scientific research versus wildlife management.
So if I can please follow up, can you help me understand within the dash ones, within the dash one wording, what is it that you are fearful that you could not accomplish in that dash one language that you could accomplish on the base bill?
Chair Krupp, Representative Hunt, what the specific language does is it actually restricts us in the amendment to those projects that are classified as scientific research type projects. And if we were not conducting a research type activity, then we could not utilize the aircraft for other what we would consider normal wildlife management activities. And as I expressed before, that can involve transmitting from an aircraft to somebody on the ground to take a specific animal if that was needed. It could include things that we haven't even thought of today that might come up in the future. But when you're with the narrowly confining it to scientific research, yes, you feel that that is a little too restrictive.
Sure. I guess more just a process question to help educate a freshman. When you're testifying, are you basically representing the viewpoint of the department, of the commission, of the governor's office? And it's possible, I recognize that they're all one position, but I mean, is the position that you're outlining in support of the base bill and opposed to the dash ones representative of all those three or some subset of those three?
Chair Krupp, Representative Hunt, the bill as submitted by the department went completely through the department, the commission, and the governor's office. And the amendments as have been presented have not gone in front of our commission. We're acting on behalf of the commission based on the direction that they provided us to begin with. And have confined that within the department and the director's office.
Sure. Last one. So your understanding is that the commission and the governor are supportive of the base bill as it stands now?
Chair Krupp, Representative Hunt, I'm not 100% sure about the current governor's office. When we submitted all of this, it was under the previous administration. And we have not heard anything from this governor's office that they are in opposition to the bill. I haven't talked with them directly about it.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Ray, you had a concern regarding an answer that Ron had given, and we might want to make this clarification here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In taking a look at dash one amendments, we can really split them in three parts. One addresses protecting public safety and wildlife species, and this legislative measure allows the department to do that. The second thing is defining protecting public safety and wildlife species by rule. Therefore, it's not defined by statute. And the third is the scientific research, which the witness addressed. In the original measure, if you take a look at your hand and gross measure, you'll see what is deleted. That's part of the original measure, which spoke specifically to wildlife management activities or protecting human safety, and then prescribed how human safety could be protected. Wildlife management activities was not defined in the original measure. Under the dash one measure, it gives authority to define public safety and wildlife, and kind of spells out what is meant by the management practices. So really, there's three components within the Dash 1 amendments that have a substantive effect on the measure.
Okay, thank you. Any additional comments, Ron?
Chair Krupp, we feel that there probably are other places already in statute that define, at least as far as some of the species go, public safety for bear and cougar specifically. That's typically what we think of in relation to this. Some of it could involve some of the potential disease outbreak that we wanted to take care of, and aerial gunning would be the most appropriate method to achieve that. But we feel that we have broad enough authority underneath the current statutes to do those activities now, just not with the aircraft.
Okay, quick question for you. I received an email from a particular individual who is asserting that we have not had an outbreak of chronic wasting disease in Oregon. I seem to recall that we had, did not we find some chronic wasting in the state?
Chair Kraft, fortunately to this point in time
we
have not
okay.
documented any CWD.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to add, Ron, at this time?
Nothing else.
Okay. Members? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair would like to call Sally Mackler, Carol Porter, and Martin Taylor from the Sierra Club. If you'd come forward, please. Welcome.
Welcome. Chair Krupp, members of the committee. I was before you once before as a Sierra Club supporter of House Bill 2209 with the Dash 1 amendments. And I do deeply regret the fact that today we're actually here in opposition to 2209, because it appears that the Dash 1 amendments are unlikely to be the direction that this committee goes. I prefaced my comments last time by saying that my relatively short experience with Sierra Club, I did not tend to have all the answers, and I didn't want to fall on the wrong side of my oath. But this time I'm prepared with people who have all the answers from the Sierra Club's perspective, and I'll let them do most of the talking. I would like to just very briefly address the process we've gone through this bill. We started by working with ODF&W to try to establish a set of amendments that would limit the use of aerial hunting to those things that were deemed necessary based on their initial testimony. And that was testimony primarily focused at the wasting disease in the elk population. I commented last time, and I would repeat, that Sierra Club is not comfortable with the practice of aerial hunting and has seen it in many other states, but we recognize that there is an appropriate time for that practice, and that's particularly when you're dealing with disease in a species that we all care about. So this to us was an elk bill that we could work with the department to try to achieve success. In fact, the Dash 1 amendments came from ODF&W. It is a little bit troubling that when given the direction from the chair to go out and work on compromise language with all parties, we went not only out to find that we couldn't get all the parties involved, but we lost ODF&W on the amendments that they originally submitted. And I think the losing of ODF&W and those amendments became part of a conversation around wolves. And that, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I think the point in which we reached impasse, not with the advocates from, say, the Oregon Hunters Association, but with ODF&W, came on the conversation about what will happen under this bill if the wolves become part of a management plan, and they want to retain some powers over that. In this case, people may say that wolves kill elk. I'm a little afraid that may be exactly what takes place. We have a real problem with the elk population, and to lose this bill over the wolves, or an extinct species that doesn't even exist in Oregon statute right now, is a shame. I don't know that will be the outcome of this process, but I think we're putting something in jeopardy that we know is a problem for something that is theoretically going to be managed down the road in Oregon, maybe 2 years. And maybe this is just a premature conversation to have about wolves. I would also slightly take exception to an answer that I heard from Mr. Englund, which sort of tried to focus these amendments around the issue of scientific research. In our initial discussions with ODF&W, that was certainly part of what ODF&W wanted the ability to do, scientific research. To be honest, that caused a little consternation within Sierra Club, because that's a broad phrase. we were more comfortable with the phrase protecting human and wildlife species. But I think that Ray did a good job of explaining that this bill has a couple components. Anything that would be considered wildlife management that is covered by the phrase protecting human health or wildlife species would have been covered in those amendments. Those amendments were not about scientific research. Scientific research was something that was important for ODF&W to have in the bill, and we said reluctantly, okay. But this, the nub of that amendment is the phrase protecting human health and wildlife species. And frankly, that covers almost all wildlife management practices. What it doesn't cover under wildlife management is the phrase control populations, which can be found in statute. I think Representative Worth did a good job of reading us the definition of control at the last hearing. The definition of management at the last hearing. But the definition of manage means to protect, preserve, propagate, promote, utilize, and control wildlife. At the point in which we're controlling wildlife and we're talking about the wolves, we have written a very broad authority to do far more than just protect human health and protect wildlife species. And that's something that Sierra Club is uncomfortable with. To be honest, Sierra Club's kind of uncomfortable with the very practice of aerial hunting for pretty obvious reasons. Many of our members are campers, backpackers, and hikers, and fishers, and people who like to enjoy the woods for hunting. And for those folks, having helicopters flying around shooting things is a little disruptive to that experience. But we were trying to be very reasonable in this process, and I think you will find that in the future we will also be reasonable. We will work with the agency and other parties to try to find consensus language. We have an impasse, and I just want to make sure that that impasse is correctly characterized. It is an impasse around wolves, not around elk. And at the point in which this committee wants to deal with the elk issue exclusively, we are very happy to work with everyone once again. And at that point, I'd like to turn it over to our key experts.
Quick question for you, Martin, before we hear from your friends. By the comment you just made in regards to the experience of being out indoors, and helicopters are certainly noisy machines, there's no question about that. You feel that there probably would be some use of helicopters in this process, and that's obviously why the agency wants the bill. So you're assuming that they will go ahead with the use of helicopters for this purpose to some extent. Any idea how much you think? Is it going to be a lot, a little?
You know, Representative Krupp, I felt more comfortable answering that question a little earlier in this process when the wolf wasn't part of the storyline. We currently in Oregon do have aerial hunting through the Department of Agriculture and the federal government. Mm-hmm. And while it's not a practice that people in the wilderness feel is desirable, you don't actually hear a lot about it. It's not so prolific that, you know, you're getting rushed with concerns and complaints from folks who have had their outdoor experience interrupted by light aircraft and helicopters shooting at animals. But now this wolf is a very troubling question, because in other states it is a very common practice to shoot wolves and coyotes from the air, and it does become a problem for everyone's enjoyment of the outdoors, and it becomes a problem for the species. So I don't expect this department under this administration to take a population of wolves that doesn't really even exist in Oregon today and start plowing them all down. But this is also statute that you're writing not just for today, but you're writing in perpetuity. And I don't know that we won't come to a time in Oregon where this is going to become a real big problem, as the bill is written. And I want to reserve the right to say whether or not this is going to be a epidemic today or not isn't really the issue. It's an issue where we're looking after Oregon's future. And is this something that one day is going to become a very big problem for the experience in the outdoors?
All right. Thank you. Shelley?
My name is Carol.
I'm sorry. Forgive me, please. Welcome, and thank you for coming today.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. The Sierra Club appreciated working with the department on amendments on this bill. However, since those efforts failed, we do have to come today and oppose this bill as it is. We feel, the Sierra Club feels, that this bill is not necessary. We feel that the controls in the department is already, Oregon already allows wildlife control by air with non-lethal means. They use nets and other devices. So we feel that this method of slaughter by air, death from above, on aerial hunting is not something that our members, and we believe Oregonians, want. Sierra Club members and Oregon citizens feel an ownership for outdoors and wild places. you know, people, as Martin mentioned, hikers, backpackers, bird watchers, hunters. We all feel like the outdoors are a part of what we love and where we go, and we would all be affected by aerial gunning in all different ways, whether it's worrying about your children or your family out in the woods, or, you know, getting notification. I mean, there's a lot of things that could impact our use and our experience and change it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
And it's Sally, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, the process of elimination, I figured it out finally. Welcome, and for the record, state your name, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Sally Mackler, and I'm the Sierra Club Oregon Chapter Wildlife Chair. And I come from Jacksonville, Oregon today, and appreciate the opportunity to address you about this issue. We have a number of concerns about the bill as it's written. And one of the main concerns is that aerial hunting is a very extreme form of hunting. It's very controversial. It's extremely costly. It's dangerous, and it also comes with a very high risk of liability. So we're very concerned about that. And because of the extreme nature of the activity, we feel it's very important that it be restricted, as the amendments indicated, to emergency situations only for the protection of the public and also for the protection of wildlife species. The way that the bill is now written, the language is extremely broad, and it's not exactly clear who is doing what to whom, by whom, and where this may happen. For instance, there's no qualifying or defining language that says what exactly wildlife management activities are, which is one of the things that we had requested in the amendment. Would that be related to sport hunting? Would it be related to animal control? Would it be related to damage control, where we would be gunning wildlife for the protection of private property? Would it be related to science? Would it be related to predator control or aerial gunning of wolves? It could be any of the above, as the language is written. As far as public safety goes, there's no definition for that either. Would that be for disease control? Would it be, again, for damage control or predator control? Again, it could be any of the above, as the language is written. And the other troubling aspect of the lack of definition is it states that the department would be the party participating in this activity, but it also says they're agents. And who would those agents be? Would they be hunters? Would they be scientists? Would they be employees? Would they be pilots? That's all open-ended as well. So we feel that without that restriction and definition, that this is a very open-ended and dangerous way of writing statute. Again, we don't have any objections to the use of this controversial and rather extreme practice for emergency situations or for disease control. Those kinds of things is another issue. The other troubling aspect of this is, what are the fiscal and legal impacts of this? I've provided you with some handouts that are indicative of the cost, the liability, and the danger factor. You can see there's one chart in there that deals with the accidents that have been incurred, and this is by no means an exclusive chart, but it does give you an indication of the crash records, and the first chart has to do with the federal government's crash records. And you can see that in about 12 years there have been roughly 20 crashes, dozens of injuries, 7 fatalities. The other bit of information that I provided for you has to do with state wildlife management activities, and those are not in a nice, neat chart for you. They're just written out as they were taken off the National Safety Transportation Board website. But as you can see, we are having the same problems, whether it be state management or whether it be federal management. There are crashes, and because these are low-flying aircraft that are moving at very rapid rates, and we're having weapons being fired from them, they run into trees, they run into the ground, they frequently run into power lines. So there is a liability issue, not only with the pilots and the people in the aircraft and the aircraft itself, but the individuals who may be involved from below, the public as well. So that opens up a huge liability, which leads me to our next point, is why would the state want to incur that liability and ostensibly duplicate the services that the federal government and the taxpayers are already paying for? And the last bit of information in your handouts is a list of the animals that Wildlife Services has eliminated in the state in 2001. And I've highlighted the aerial gunning, aspects of their work, and you can see that there were over 3,000 animals that have been aerial gunned in the state in the last year. I just do not understand why we would want to duplicate those efforts and take on that liability when it's already being handled by the federal government. So, in conclusion, we just have major concerns about the language as it's written and feel that it, because of the risk factor and the cost and liability factor, that it should be carefully restricted to emergency use only and for the protection of our wildlife and the public safety.
Okay.
And yes. Scientific research as well.
All right. Thank you, Sally. Members, any questions of Sally? Representative Gilman.
In these airplane crashes, were there any people on the ground injured?
I don't believe so, but you'd have to read each one carefully. There have been actually people that have been had pot shots taken at them by Wildlife Services, the USDA. I've got about a 15-page memo from some law enforcement agencies in California, which I'd be happy to provide for you. I didn't bring that with me because I thought that was rather an extreme example. So I thought that that would probably not be appropriate. I'm sure that's not the norm, but it's certainly feasible that you could incur property damage or personal damage. Thank you.
Well, thank the three of you. I appreciate you coming up. Thank you. Chair, I'd like to call George Hutchinson. George, welcome.
Hi.
For the record, state your name again, sir.
I'm George Hutchinson. I'm here representing today the Southern Oregon Forest Coalition, which I briefly mentioned some of the component elements of last week. I always smile when I think of the Provost Grange being part of this consortium, along with half a dozen watershed councils and wildlife groups. I'm wondering, since helicopter gunning from the air can already happen under the auspices of several other agencies, why this agency needs this permission to do this at this time. I'm wondering, how is the state of Oregon going to pay for this in a time of budget crunch and funding difficulties? Why now? Why does this need to be done now? My second question is, what the heck is a wolf doing on that list? We don't even have wolves in Oregon. Is, again, seems like a backdoor attempt to do something to the Endangered Species Act and the process involving that act that the members of the organizations I represent are just adamantly opposed to. I mean, some of them will say pretty strong statements like, over my dead body, they're going to be shooting wolves from airplanes in this state. So I think this is not a necessary bill or a good bill, and I hope you put it to rest quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Any questions for George? Thanks. Appreciate it. Anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2209? Hearing none, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2209 and open a work session on House Bill 2209.
Mr. Chair.
Members, before we go any further, there is some valid points that have been brought up, and I think Mr. Hutchinson just, I think, alluded to them. It was basically based on your earlier testimony or questioning in the first time we heard this bill, Representative Nelson, in regards to helicopters are very expensive items to charter, and there probably is going to be some fiscal attached to this, so we will be subsequently referring this bill to Ways and Means to let them kind of hash that out, try to figure out if it's substantial or not. So, Representative Nelson.
So, Mr. Chair, do I move that we move this bill to Ways and Means?
Well, I yes. If there is no, actually, Representative, you can move at this time to move the bill to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2209 to Ways and Means.
Okay, members, House Bill 2209 has been, the motion is made to move it to Ways and Means. Is that with a due pass or no?
No, sir.
Okay. With no due pass recommendation, discussion, members? Representative Hunt.
Based on the testimony we received, it seems clear to me anyway that we've got a significant problem with elk that we need to do something to address it. And the specific approach of aerial hunting seems to me to be an appropriate way to do it. I do have some concerns about some of the testimony we've had in terms of the unintended consequences of broadening it too much, but I can very much support Representative Nelson's motion to refer it on without a due pass. So.
Okay. Representative Worth.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm going to vote against this bill specifically for the reasons that we discussed regarding the wolves. I think there's too many questions that are still lying unanswered, and perhaps if there was a clause in there that said in emergency situations only, I would support it, but as it stands, I can't.
Okay, thank you. Any additional thoughts, members? Representative Byrd.
I'm going to be voting no on this bill. Leave it at that.
All right, thank you. Any additional questions, members? Okay, clerk with the call to roll, please.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Warren?
No.
Representative Dillman?
Aye.
Chair Crump?
Aye. House Bill 2209 is hereby passed without recommendation to the Ways and Means Appropriate Subcommittee. And we're going to close a public, or excuse me, close. Members, we're sending this bill to Ways and Means, not to a subcommittee of Ways and Means. That's the appropriate language that needs to be stated on the record. Anything else, Greg? Thank you. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 2209. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2258. Ray, you want to share with us briefly what this bill does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2258, which was originally heard on the 18th, extends the sunset of surcharge on combination hunting licenses imposed for access and habitat programs. There is a dash one amendment, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What the dash one does is specifies the surcharges and updates current statutory language, removing obsolete statutory requirements, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ray. Chair would like to call Ron Anglin, Chuck Smith, and Ward Armstrong, if you would all come together, please. Ron, you want to start first, please? Welcome, for the record.
Thank you, Chair Crump, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator, ODFW. With me today, I have Chuck Smith, immediately to my right, who is the Chair of the Board of the Access and Habitat Board, and Ward Armstrong, one of the other members. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, staff provided you with an informational briefing on the Access and Habitat Program. This is a program that was originally adopted back in 1993, provides a $2 surcharge to hunting licenses, and generates funds that are to be used primarily on private lands for improving wildlife habitat on private land and also to provide access to hunters. This is a program that has had broad support amongst the landowning and hunting community over the years. It was reauthorized by the legislative session in 1997. And we're here today asking the committee to move forward with reauthorizing it again. Since its inception, I think it's important to note that there's been over $5 million raised that the department has applied directly to private lands and has resulted in a little over $11 million in match that have been spent to improve wildlife habitat and to help landowners with specific things on their property. With that, Chair Krupp, the department would ask that the committee support this bill, and I'll turn it over to Chair Smith.
Thank you, Ron. Welcome. For the record, state your name.
For the record, my name is Chuck Smith. I'm the chairman of the Access and Habitat Board.
I come today to strongly recommend that we support the approve as amended. One of the things about this program is it's a long-term program. These projects take 5, 6, 7 years to implement and get on the ground. When you're working with landowners, they're not used to people coming to them and saying, well, we'll do this if funding is approved. That is a stumbling block. We went to our constituents, and I'm going to ask Ward to go through the process that we went through to determine why we wanted the sunset removed.
Welcome.
Thank you.
See you, Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ward Armstrong. I reside in Salem, and I'm retired, but I'm a member of this board. Mr. Chair, just a word of background. I was representing the Oregon Forest Industries Council in 1993 when this, and one of the groups that supported, kind of came up with this idea and supported the passage of this program in the 1993 session. That was a very, you may have heard some of this 2 weeks ago, but to repeat just a minute, that was a controversial time between the department, landowners, agriculture and forest, and hunters. It was a contentious time. People were working on different issues, sort of at cross purposes. Some landowners were concerned enough that they were threatening to close their lands to hunting. And a very wise approach was taken to develop this program. Now, it was landmark legislation. We didn't have anything like this before. And I was very much in the feeling that we should limit the scope of this bill. Let's give it a try. And that's what was done. So a sunset was put on the legislation, and it then had to come back to the legislature. If it was not approved, it would have gone out of existence. Well, that time went well, and very quickly, I think we all became kind of pleased with the success it was getting between landowners and the hunting and the department communities. It was then extended in 1997, as was reported. Chuck and I have appeared a time or two before the Ways and Means Committee since then, because this bill always needs to come back before Ways and Means because there's money attached. This last year, since we realized the second extension was on us at the end of 1990, at the year end of 2003, again it would sunset. So we felt it was our obligation to test with our constituent communities what the feeling was of this program after all this time, 10 years. So we have spent quite a bit of time thinking as a council, as a board, how we would really adequately reflect those views. So we made a special effort in November this last to bring in the different groups that are what we think as part of our constituents, the hunting community, the agricultural community, and the forest community particularly. Out of that session, the question came up by several that, well, you know, at this point, we've had 10 years of experience. We've had no opposition. It would ease the administration of our program if we did not have a sunset. Now, if it was just removed. And we're mindful that if you had this existence and history of having a sunset, it may raise some questions in people's minds whether that's wise. And our thought was this program is, in fact, reviewed every 2 years by the Ways and Means Committee. There is an opportunity by the legislature to provide oversight every 2 years. So our board voted to recommend its removal altogether, took that to the Fish and Wildlife Commission in December, and they agreed. So that's kind of the history of why you have the amendments, the -1 amendments before you. The most important thing, obviously, is that the program continue. And as the chairman has mentioned, some of our programs are multi-year programs. These are not just one-year programs. That's the reason for a longer time period. So that's kind of briefly what has led us to being here today in support of the Dash 1 amendments.
Well, thank you. Members, questions? So basically, the Dash 1 amendment, thinking addendum. Speak. Open mouth, try not to insert foot. Basically just removes the sunset entirely, correct? And that's really all it does.
Okay.
Very good. Representative Nelson.
Yes, I just want to be sure. On the financial for this, how much money do we get off of this? I don't see anything, and I'm surprised it's such a...
Actually, Representative Nelson, I think... In Mr. Anglin's testimony on the second page, it gives us some sense of what they've collected in terms of total amounts over a number of years. I don't think it has. If you're asking how much are they collecting a biennium, I don't think we've been provided that. Well, Chuck, do you have a comment there?
Chairman Krupp, it's about $1.5 million per biennium.
Per biennium, okay.
So,
yes.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Is there some requirement? I'm a little dumb about this. Is there some requirement that we have this continue?
Is it required that it continue?
Uh-huh.
No, but we believe it's highly desirable.
But, excuse me,
sure.
Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Smith?
Yes.
But, I mean, do we need to, people cannot just continue it on their own without having a charge to do this? I mean, I'm always amazed that we keep having to have these funds to do things that are just prudent.
Sheriff Krupp?
Sure. Feel free.
About $300,000 per biennium, maybe $400,000, and I'm making approximate numbers, is through tags, through raffle ticket and auction tag sales. So that is what I would call voluntary. The rest is a $2 surcharge on hunting licenses. Part of your hunting license fee goes to this fund.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, another question.
Yes.
So, I mean, does this allow us to sustain, maintain our hunting privileges by keeping this... ACH, what do you call it? A&H board?
Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the goal of this board is to, and this program, are to keep public lands open through cooperation with the private landowners and working on their land, providing either direct payment or work in kind so that the public has a place to hunt. And to improve, in the process, improve the relationships between the department, the landowner, and the hunter.
And I think, Representative, there's some really good examples of the positive effect, and that kind of relationship he's talking about on page 2 in the third paragraph talks about some of the acres of habitat. One that I know you and I care a lot about is the last sentence there, or last two sentences, talking about the emergency seeding projects after the forest fires.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a just a huge help to private landowners. And you know, I think there's some value in that in terms of if the public wants to have access to private land, that they step up to the plate, as it were, and help that private landowner assist in enhancing their habitat, in some cases helping them with emergency situations, just like we've talked about here in terms of the fire. And I think, to me, I have to say, members and Representative Nelson, that's the value of this program and why I think it's worthy of our consideration, from my viewpoint. Any additional questions? Representative Smith.
I have a question. Maybe you can answer it, Chair Krupp, or Mr. Hanklin.
Uh-oh.
Or Mr. Smith. The surcharge apparently goes away if we don't renew this, but was this considered as part of the hunting fee increase bill that we did earlier?
Ron? No.
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith. No, it's not.
It is not. Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chair, you made some reference to the importance of having the permanence of it in terms of planning and long-range thinking. Is there somewhere in between 6 years and forever that accomplishes that goal? I don't know what's magic about 6 years, and I understand others may have concern about forever. I'm just wondering if there's some amount of years that meets the goal that you're referencing.
Sure, if I might. Obviously, the less frequent you come up to this deadline where you have to put into a contract with a private landowner, we'll do this if the program continues. That creates a little bit of heartburn for the private landowner. They're not used to dealing with, we'll do this if. They're used to cutting a deal and getting on with life.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Sure, absolutely.
Add to that as well, Representative Hunt. And quite a number of our projects are multi-year projects. Now, they're not like 20-year projects. I think we were counting here before this hearing that there's, in the last few years, there's been at least 13 to 15 that are multi-year. Some of them are like 5 years and then can be extended for another five. So there's not a real good answer to your question of what's ideal here. I guess we would just argue that the more time that gives us the ability to have these long-term arrangements with a landowner, the better.
Chair, if I might.
Please, absolutely.
A lot of these habitat projects, like weed control on the east side particularly, are not done overnight. They're multi-year applications, and so it's almost impossible to do these as a task. They're more of a process.
Well, if there's no further questions, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't I call Al Elkins, Jared Broadfoot, and Rod Harder up together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
For the record, my name is Al Elkins. I'm representing the Oregon Hunters Association, and we are in support of House Bill 2258. I've been involved in the legislative process for about 18 years. Prior to that, I worked at the State Department of Education. And I've gotten to know quite a bit about government and programs. I also did some work as liaison when I was at the department with federal monies that came into the state. And I must say that this program that you have before you today in House Bill 2258 is the best program I've ever seen. It gives you more dollar for a bang for your buck than any program I've ever witnessed. It actually, money does flow to the ground, and goals and objectives are met. Projects are started. They have a start, a middle, and an end. It's built on a tiered system where you have local A&H boards that review projects, listen to proposals, and then send them on to the state board for approval. And then the commission, the ODF&W commission, has final authority on what projects it will fund and which ones they won't. It's amazing to me that at every one of these presentations, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife gets a presentation similar to the same presentation that you had a couple weeks ago, where they have the slides, they show the projects, they show how much money is coming in from A&H, but they also show how much money is being contributed from such organizations such as ours and from the local community. So it's to me, it's the only program in the state of Oregon that actually bridges the gap between industry, citizens, and state government. And I would award it all the gold stars in the world if I could. I think Ron Anglin's testimony speaks to the results as the Oregon Hunters Association sees it, and that's that more than 718,000 acres of habitat have been enhanced, and about 9.7 million acres of private ranch and farmlands have been opened for public hunting access. And that's the bottom line for us. So we would graciously ask you to support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Rod, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ron Harder. I'm here today representing the Oregon United Sporting Dogs Association. Not surprisingly, I had my fingers in this pie back 10 years ago, or right at 10 years ago. And some background from someone on the ground on this issue. Those were, as Mr. Armstrong said, acrimonious times. Everyone seemed to be at each other's throats, and Representative Ray Baum asked me to work with Representative Larry Soa to come up with the basis for this program. And I did that gladly and included the Cattlemen, Farm Bureau, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, the timber industry, a host of people that were involved in putting this together. And just a little bit contrary to what Mr. Armstrong said, it was not always roses. There were some real lumps in the road as we went forward with this. And the last time it came up for renewal, there was some discussion about whether or not to renew it. And at that particular time, the agency did not have the vision that it has today, and fought tooth and nail to keep from getting any changes. The morning of the hearing, lo and behold, all that changed, and Representative Soa was furnished with the letter telling just how much they could do and how far they were going, how there would be no need to even talk about this bill. And in fact, we have renewed for 6 years, and the program is working. It doesn't need fixing in any particular manner that I can see. We have gained a great deal of access. Landowners have benefited. And originally, when we started this, gaining access was a prime issue with hunters. Establishing habitat for wildlife, another issue. Creating habitat that would draw animals from private land onto land where people were willing to have them and paying for feed on those particular parcels. Exchanging access for tags so that landowners can hunt elk and deer that are doing damage on their property. Setting up tags that can be auctioned off or raffled off each year, and that money going back into the elk and deer programs and whatever programs that the tags are drawn for. And as you can see, it's a broad spectrum of things that it does. I would not support the permanency of the fee. At this particular point in time, if we have a fee increase in the pipeline, if, in fact, we were to make this permanent, we have an additional permanent fee increase on hunters. I'm not sure what impact that might have on the fee increase that's proceeding through the process. The other thing that troubles me a little bit, and I don't have the numbers on the top of my head, but there is a great deal of money left in the access and habitat pot. And being around for a while, I remember SAFE. And the time such as these, and I am afraid that should that money become a target and this were to be made permanent, that could be a continuing target and perhaps a moving one. And given the six-year nature of this extension that we're talking about and these couple of other little things that I threw in here, I would certainly support the bill the way it is written without question all day, every day. It's a good program. It should go forward. But we would like to see, and I don't see really with the six-year nature where leaving it to be renewed again in 6 years would be a very bad thing. I think for a lengthy project, 6 years gives you a pretty good time frame. Questions, I would answer any questions if I could.
Members, any questions of Rod? Got off lucky, my friend. Jared, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Jared Broadfoot, here representing the Oregon chapters of Safari Club International. We also are in support of House Bill 2258. Just a couple points. Both Rod and Al have made great points that we want to reiterate. There are three funding sources for the Access and Habitat program: the surcharge from hunting licenses, allocations from landowner assistance programs, and then proceeds from the annual auction of raffle tickets for deer and elk tags, 10 per species. per year about $800,000in funding from those sources, and then an additional $2 million per year in matching funds from other cooperative groups. This program does provide comfort also for hunters, knowing that they have a program to provide access for them, comfort for the landowners to provide habitat and also the hunters. This program, last year alone, there was $100,000 allocated specifically, as the chair mentioned, for the reseeding of private grounds that had burned through forest fires. It's very important, and we wholeheartedly support that, support the program. And the current balance in the account, we believe, is just above $2 million. So extending it for 6 years is a good thing. Indefinitely, we would not support that either. So we urge you to support 2258 as it's written and extend the sunset until 2009. So.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes. Oh. Thank you, Chair Bellman. Mr. Broffitt, you mentioned the $2 million, now that everybody knows about it. Is that already allocated for upcoming projects, or is that just an ending balance?
Through the chair, Representative Smith, I'm not aware if that money, if any of that money has been allocated. I think that's a question that could be answered by Department of Fish and Wildlife. And though that figure that we have came from a recent handout from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, so, and they could accurately explain exactly where the money comes from and if it's allocated.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to come up?
Thank you.
Oh, well, don't go too far back. We may have some more questions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gilman, members of the committee. For the record, again, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. Yes, there currently is a balance left within the account. Part of that, as most of you are aware, our department has gone through major relooking at our account balances during the last 3 years or so, and there's been some question on how much money should have actually been in that account. Those figures have been established and paid back where there was some money that had been borrowed from it and used for other purposes. And our goal, now that we know exactly how much is in there, is to work with the legislative body to increase our biennial allocation for being able to expend those funds out, and we'll lay out a program for spending that down to zero over the course of several bienniums.
Follow up?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Anglin. Are there projects then that have not been done, or is this just extra money? I mean, that we're overcharging, I guess, is where I'm going.
Vice Chair Gilman, Representative Smith, how part of that occurs is that when the program was first set up, we didn't have a lot of projects coming online right to begin with, and we got more projects through time. We currently allocate out all the money for projects in every biennium. So in some cases, there's some projects that don't finish up before the biennium's over, and we have to carry that forward. So by increasing the allocation, it gives us the flexibility then to go after more projects with landowners and to use those funds.
Thank you.
Yes, because I think we have a bit more to add. Come on up.
Okay.
how many projects were left unfunded? I guess that's one of the questions we have.
For the record, I'm Chuck Smith.
Chuck.
We had a spending limitation. Let me go back. We've had a spending limitation of $1.5 million a year, because in the beginning they didn't know exactly how much the auction and raffle tags would bring in. So we always set out in the beginning to spend less so we wouldn't go into debt. As we saw that we had more, we didn't raise the spending limitation. The spending limitation, if it's taken up, we can then do more projects. But by its very nature, we can't go in the hole. We can't, so we have to have a surplus. Another thing is, we have projects right now that are 3 and 4 year projects that have commitments against that money, because we look at it on a biennium to biennium basis rather than, I mean, that's just the way the state keeps their books. But we have made commitments out in the future on that money, but we don't look at those, and we reapprove them each biennium. I don't know if that helps answer the question.
It does.
Now, additional questions?
Representative Hunt.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There seems to be a love in support of the program and the concept of extending it. The only debate that I'm hearing seems to be about the time. Can you give me a sense? Do you typically award for a given project a grant multiple years, or are your projects typically one shot as a grant and then nothing else to that particular project?
Vice Chair Gilman, Representative Hunt, all of the above. We have projects that come in that are one time, and we have projects that come in that are multiple. For an example, during this last year, in discussions with the board, we came up with the concept of providing some one-time funds to deal with the fire restoration in Southern Oregon and in Central Oregon, and those were a one-time shot. We have some of the travel access areas like the Hefner Regulated Hunt area that has been reapproved by the board. This is the second time around, so going close to 10 years at this point in time for that particular one. We have travel access areas in the Coast Range and in the Cascades, the same type of thing, where in those particular ones we're actually funding Oregon State Police cadets or retired game officers to go out and patrol those lands, and in return the timber companies leave those open during the hunting seasons, and it helps control vandalism, etc. Prior to that, timber companies were closing their lands down, not necessarily because of hunters, but because if the lands were open, then there was access in for the vandalism. So this program has reopened those lands, and as stated in my written testimony, there's about 9.7 million acres that have been opened up to public access for hunting purposes as a result of this program. So it is a combination of all of the above on one-time and multiple-year projects.
Yes, additional.
If I could follow up, maybe this is more for you. Based on some of the testimony we've had related to some projects which are not 50-year projects but might be multiple-year projects, I mean, do you see any challenge, especially toward the end of a six-year period, with their ability to exercise some control that might warrant an extension beyond 6 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, in the time since 1994, since the program was established, I don't think we've had illustrated to us any definite problems with having the sunset attached to a certain date. Big problems, no, and I understand that there may be a little heartache with the landowners and the board granting a project if they know in 2009 they're going to have to come back and have a chance of this, the funding going away. But it also does provide, like I said, comfort for the hunters that are putting money into this, that we are going to have a chance to come back and reevaluate once again the program. So I think 6 years does give us enough time, and I do not think that it creates tremendous problems for the board in granting projects. It hasn't seemed to anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have one additional question. Al, it's for you. The Dash 1 amendments, I didn't hear in your testimony your thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair, we understand, again, for the record, Al Elkins, Oregon Hunters Association, we understand the Dash 1s remove the sunset. We don't have any problem removing the sunset. The Oregon Hunters Association doesn't, because you've got a built-in mechanism of every 2 years, the emergency board has the opportunity to review. If that wasn't there, we might have that problem. I think Chairman Smith brings up a good point in duration of the projects. If it's going to be longer, or if someone in the next 2 years wants to do a longer project, removing the sunset would enable them to do so. And we want what works best for the A&H board. The fact that you have that review every 2 years, and we go to that review, and they look over everything in relation to that, it's a good review. I think the usual need for a sunset is review, and I think you've already got that built into this program. So that's where we are. If the sunset stays, we're fine with that too, as long as the program keeps on going. But
Additional questions, members? All right, thank you. Appreciate it. I'd like to call Greg Addington and Katie Fast.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Greg Addington, Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. I, too, am here to continue the love fest for the Access and Habitat program.
It's getting better, Mr. Chair.
Now, Greg, I have
more
to say
now.
That do you include Rod Harder in that?
No comment, Mr. Chair.
I got to tell you, members, Rod Harder's been through a lot of battles in this building, and to have him come here and speak kindly of a program like this is substantial, I think, to the effectiveness of the program. So no offense, Rod. Please continue, Greg.
Thank you. You know, you've heard a lot of the good things about the program, and I would just add that the Oregon Farm Bureau was, you know, very involved to begin the process, and again with the renewal of the process in 97. We have members that sit on local boards all over the state, and certainly many of our members are involved and benefactors of some of the projects. We would prefer to see the program or the bill go through as it's written without the amendments. There's no major problems that we have with the program, but our members seem to feel that that's a good way to maintain a check and balance on the program. You know, little things come up, and in no way do I want this to reflect on the current makeup of the Access and Habitat Board or anything. They've been nothing but cooperative and sought us out and sought our input. So we're very appreciative of that, and we can foresee a smooth relationship, but there seems to be a comfort level with the sunset clause that allows our membership to come forward if something isn't working out to their benefit, a way for them to come and air their concerns that way. So I'll just sum up. We very much are supportive of House Bill 2258. Would like to see it pass in its current form. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? All right. Katie, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Krebs, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast, representing the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We're here also in favor of 2258 as written. The Access and Habitat Program gives landowners the opportunity to apply for grants, which would alleviate and help prevent wildlife damage, which is a large impact on our members' ranches' economic viability. This program also gives hunters some financial responsibility of wildlife management, and I think a better understanding of the wildlife that they cherish. This program on a local level has been able to bring together two sometimes very diverse groups, the landowners and then the hunting community, to discuss wildlife damage issues and bring some heightened awareness to wildlife issues. We feel that extending the sunset will allow this discussion to carry forth in the 2009 session and allow any maybe problems that might come up in the next few years a chance to bring those discussions to the legislature. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, members, questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure whether this is a fair question to ask or not, but if we were so inclined to remove the sunset, I know you both have spoken to wanting it. How would that affect your support or non-support of it? Would you totally pull away from the bill or?
Chair Kev, Representative Beyer. The cattleman's position is the program's at most importance, so we would still support the bill if amended as well. Just our membership, the message I've gotten is to favor the sunset at this time.
If I could
please
just add to that, Chair Krupp, Representative Beyer, we would prefer to have the sunset remain. We are not going to pull our support for the program
if it is taken away.
Well, I have a question to the two of you. Do you feel that the two-year review that is in place, the program in Ways and Means, is adequate to address the concern that you might, the nervousness that some of your members might have of what might transpire down the road?
Mr. Chair, I think that the sentiment is that it is easier to deal with a sunset to address problems than to derail a program that is established, you know, if that were the case. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think there seems to be more of a comfort level with the sunset.
Chair Krupp, I'd like to add, I wouldn't say there's 100% satisfaction with the program in the countryside. There are some issues with possibly access being promoted over habitat. Where's the local control level? And possibly in 6 years, and I'm not alleviating that this is the feeling, but possibly in 6 years, the state might be in a situation where the program isn't best suiting either the hunting community or the landowning community. And I think that's the reason for the sunset. And those issues, I don't think, can really be addressed in a Ways and Means discussion, a need for a program.
Well, I have to say that is a reasonable point that you've just made. That is the first real reasonable point as to why eliminating the sunset, in my opinion, today that I've heard personally, that makes sense to me to some extent, because you're talking about a policy question. We do know, it seems, in my opinion anyway, that at times there are swings in political attitudes throughout the state. Certainly there are in the building, and that can potentially create those types of divergencies where a program that's working really well now and may work well for many years could suddenly be modified through changes in the political process, the political equation, to not be perhaps as equally balanced as it is. And I have to say, I think this is an equally balanced program, and I really have to give the board a lot of credit here, because if you've got all of us in the room shaking our heads saying, especially Rod, saying, you know, this is a pretty good program and it's working. And to your point, Katie, that, you know, there's not great agreement that the program's perfect out there. By golly, that's a pretty good endorsement if you think about it. In the political process, it's pretty rare to get even that much agreement. So I think you bring up a good point. And Representative Worth, I think you have some testimony, from a constituent you'd like to enter into the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that I think everybody's got a copy of this. It's a written statement from a constituent of mine who I'd like to submit on his behalf for the record. He was here at the last hearing and wasn't able to make it to this hearing, and he's in support of the bill and the amendment to permanently remove the surcharge. And it's the gentleman's name is Chuck Woosley. Apparently he was involved in actual writing of the part of the habitat of this program. So he's a strong supporter and knows a lot about it.
And you meant to say eliminate sunset, not surcharge.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you
surcharge sunset credit.
for the record, we want to be careful. Mm-hmm. We don't want to eliminate the surcharge.
That's right, no.
Okay. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2258? All right. Members, I'd like to mull this over a little bit more in my mind. I'm not sure that as chair I've reached a conclusion as to how I personally want to vote on this issue. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2258. And I'm sure we'll work this bill again very soon through the process. I just kind of want to mull these comments over today a little bit. And with that, I'm going to ask you, you know, even though we started a half hour late because of the session, I think in the next few minutes we can probably work the last bill here, which we've heard before. We're going to open up a work session, House Bill 2634. Ray, there are no changes to this bill, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, it is the Chair's intention that we move this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And would certainly entertain any. Representative Smith.
I'll move House Bill 2634 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, members, it's been moved House Bill 2634 to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Representative Byer. Order, please. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I'm going to be supporting this bill. I was trying to remember if ODOT actually testified at the hearing, and it didn't seem like they did because I did talk to them afterwards about any concerns they might have, and was told that, well, they originally had some concerns about the fiscal impact on the state or revenue, whatever you want to call it, but that after listening to the testimony and hearing that people weren't registering them anyway, they decided they didn't have any concerns.
Representative Byer, that is an excellent point, actually. Well, members, any further discussion? No, hearing none. Are there any objections to us moving this bill to the floor with a due pass? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair,
and
can it be on the consent
calendar? Let's put it on the consent calendar, actually. I think that's a fair idea. We'll put it on the consent calendar. Members, thanks. Great work, and we're done 5 minutes early. And,
Mr. Chair, did we hold 2416?
Yes. There are actually, members, there is another bill, almost identical, that the cattlemen are bringing forward that has slightly different definition of science. And they've asked us to hear that bill also, so we'll have an opportunity to explore this subject a little further here again shortly. And members, Representative Gilman will be chairing the meeting on Thursday, as yours truly will be out of state. So thanks. Great work today. Appreciate it. And we're adjourned.